Welcome back to HealthLink on Air. Linda Cohen along with you. You know, when a disaster strikes, even the best laid plans often fall asunder. But that only underscores the need for having disaster plans and support services in place. Well, joining me this morning to help us understand what happened at Upstate Medical University and University Hospital in September of 2001 and the lessons we've learned is Dr. William Grant, Professor of Emergency Medicine and Associate Dean of Graduate Medical Education for Upstate. Welcome, Dr. Grant.
Thank you.
So nice to have you today. So first tell us a little bit about your role at Upstate. What do you do for them?
I have two roles at Upstate. Basically, I run the research group in the Department of Emergency Medicine, which is a very broad-based group. We do clinical research, we do basic science research, and so on. And I also am the Associate Dean for Graduate Medical Education, which means I supervise all of the residency and fellowship programs at Upstate.
Wow. How did you get involved, though, in this whole notion of disaster preparedness?
Disaster preparedness. When I first came to emergency medicine several years ago, we were the group that, in response to 9/11, actually, put together a group to decide how to best address the issues of emergency preparedness. Now, clearly there are groups within the hospital, but the issue was the community. Because we're emergency medicine and because we reach out to the community, it was how do we also help the community in emergency situations? So I was asked to come and help organize some of those activities.
So did you have background in that kind of thing? Did you have to study, prepare?
None of us had any background in those kind of activities. That was part of the problem early on in the process. When 9/11 happened, I was actually in a meeting with the President's Cabinet, and our communication was, in the old days, by digital beeper. And so several of us got beeped. We got beeped out of the meeting to find out that we were asked to clear the hospital in case there were victims that needed to be transported from New York City to Upstate for treatment. And that was basically the state of the art of preparedness.
So basically there were no plans in place for a natural disaster or for a terrorist attack?
There were no coordinated plans. There were isolated plans. People didn't talk to each other. As we found in 9/11, and as most people understand who have paid attention to the after-action analysis of that event, was that even within units, even within fire departments, even within police departments, units could not even talk to each other on the same radio frequency.
So communication was probably the key need and the key obstacle in some sense.
I think that there's two. One was the communication, clearly a key need. I have a son who's a police officer, and one of the things he talks about is the communication units, even today, do not have panic buttons where you can push a button and talk to everybody who's helping to respond on a single frequency at the same time. I think the other thing is that each of the units were isolated. Fire departments talk to fire departments. Police departments talk to police departments. And one of the lessons we learned is that, yes, each of those groups, whether it's from the fire department to the police department to the Red Cross, to the National Guard, have their roles. The question is how to define those roles and then how to get folks to cooperate across roles to provide appropriate response.
And besides all the technical issues involved and the different frequencies, languages, what have you, you also have these turf battles, I would think, some degree of issues of control, who's in charge, that kind of thing.
Absolutely. And one of the ways that we have learned and have begun to address that is that through the efforts of the federal government, through FEMA and through other places, we've developed what's called an incident command system. And an incident command system is a standardized system that standardizes the roles of the responders so that everyone is clearly knowledgeable about what their role is, who is in charge of what, and those are all clearly designated. We've successfully used the incident command system not only for large disasters, even locally. If you remember several years ago, there was a tornado at the New York State Fair that was handled through an incident command system. We've had incidents in the hospitals. Those have been handled by the incident command system. But it clearly puts people in charge. It clearly has a line of authority. and it crosses all of the responding units.
So that's clearly a very big improvement.
It's a huge improvement.
What are some of the other improvements that have taken place?
Well, some of the other improvements is we've done things as simple as use plain language communication. At the time of 9/11 and at the time as people watch old movies and old TV shows, there were 10 codes, 10-4, 10-22 were used. And the problem was the 10 codes were not standardized nationally. And one of the things that we've done is we've said, no, all communication will be in plain language. If it's a fire, you say it's a fire. If it's a burglary, you say it's a burglary. If you need an ambulance, you say you need an ambulance. All done in plain language and open communication. So that has been a tremendous advantage. Especially talking across units, all of whom have their own language structures.
And tell us about some of the other things that have changed as well.
Well, I think one of the things is we've learned that you have to have different preparation for different events. A hurricane with winds and rain and potential flooding is different than just heavy rains. So if you're talking a natural disaster, that kind of preparation is different from massive fires. It's different from earthquakes. It's different from terrorist attacks. It's different from other kinds of activities. So we've learned that preparation has to be multimodal and has to be flexible enough to respond.
So are all these groups that we've that you designated or named basically prepared in all these multiple circumstances?
They're generally prepared, but what we've learned is we can prepare different people for different kinds of activities, and we can also clearly define their roles so that now it's clear that the American Red Cross comes into a disaster, if we have a natural disaster like a hurricane, later. Their job is not early rescue. Their job is to come later. That helps everyone understand that the first day after a major disaster, you will not see the Red Cross. You will see them in numbers sometime later after initial rescues occur. So they are a recovery agency. That helps everyone understand what their true role is.
What would you say the key lesson for individuals, though, is?
I think the key lesson for an individual is early on, immediately after a disaster, you need to be prepared yourself. It's going to take time for these groups to get organized. It's going to take time for them to get to you. So immediately, you need to be on your own. How do you do that? There's lots of online stuff. It's it's free. Start at the FEMA site. Start at the New York State site for emergency preparedness. And there's lots of hints, helps, and everything.
Things like, for example, having a certain amount of water in your home.
Having water in your home, having food in your home, having flashlights in your home, having candles, having an escape plan from the house, which most people don't have. They think you can walk out the front door, but you may be on the second floor of the house. How are you going to get you and your family out and be safe? Where are you going to congregate outside of a house so that everybody can check in and we can make sure everybody's safe?
Well, I mean, it seems like we've come a long way. It sounds like youth fellows and everyone who's involved in this are really on the ball, and there's a lot of good information out there. And let's hope, I mean, Syracuse is probably one of the less likely places for a terrorist attack, although we do have Nine Mile Point.
Right.
But, you know, we do have natural disasters, things we have to worry about. So clearly it's in everyone's best interest to be prepared. So you think we're ready is the question.
I think we're ready, and I think we can always be more prepared, and more is always better.
Well, Dr. William Grant, thank you so much for joining us today and helping us understand all of this. There's a lot of key information here, and I'm sure our listeners are very grateful for all your input.